episode of the ECCDC podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette Wilson, and I'm very excited to be joined in conversation today by two members of the Child Care and Learning Centre team at the University of Guelph Lab School, Starlene Rutten and Kim Burton, as we explore mobile outdoor classrooms. Star is a registered early childhood educator, an Ontario certified teacher, and has completed the Forest and Nature School practitioner course. She is a primary educator with the CCLC team and has been the lead educator for the outdoor learning program since 2017. Kim is also a registered early childhood educator and is the pedagogical lead with the CCLC team. She has a background in community-based pedagogical leadership and began her work in education and care as an outdoor educator and respite provider. In our conversation today, Kim and Star will be sharing some insight into the CCLC's Exploring Nature Outdoor Learning Summer Program, which caters for children aged 4 to 8. They'll be sharing what inspires them, some great tips and strategies for transporting materials, some wonderful resources, and so much more. I'm very excited to be having a conversation with you this afternoon. So I just wanted to start our conversation off with a question around thinking about your mobile program. A lot of educators are in traditional classrooms. They go to the same classroom every day. They have that static furniture. It's more or less the same every day. Whereas if we're thinking about some educators don't have that same space that they go to every day. They're a little bit more mobile. So could you just share with us a little bit about your mobile outdoor program and what makes it unique from traditional programs?
Yeah, well, firstly, I'd love to say thanks for having us. It's a pleasure to be able to talk about our outdoor learning program. It was in some ways a passion project and in many ways aligned with our values at the CCLC. I think what makes it unique and kind of also what makes it mobile is partially to do with who we are as a center and where we are located. So the program is run by the CCLC, the University of Guelph Child Care and Learning Center, a lab school. So we're on the University of Guelph campus, and we just so happen to be close to the Arboretum. And we also happen to have some, I guess, unused garden space behind a building that wasn't being used for much. And so we kind of asked if we could use it, and it's become a space that is a bit more of what we would call like home base, perhaps.
Yeah.
But we spend lots of our time excursioning to the Arboretum, which is how our program is mobile. The program itself is designed for children 4 to 8 years old. And I think two things that make it unique in terms of an outdoor program is that one, we follow an emergent curriculum approach, but we actually make connections to the curriculum, the Ontario Science and Technology curriculum for grades 1 to 4. So there's lots of integrated learning opportunities depending on our encounters in the Arboretum. And I would say it's unique because it's also not necessarily considered a forest school, but we also are very much inspired by, we both have our Forest and Nature School practitioner certification. So we integrate lots from what we learned there, but I also think we keep it open to outdoor more broadly. What would you say?
I agree with that. One of the things that we tried to do when we first started the program was really align with that science curriculum. But as we go, I'm recognizing how many more of the curriculum streams we actually experience throughout our time. And two of the places that we learned this. One was from the Guelph Outdoor School, which is where I got a lot of my inspiration from, and then from our Forest School Practitioners course. In those two, ways they started to show how much learning happens outside, beyond the connections that we make on the land and with the beings that live on the land. It's the many ways that we engage and play with each other that brings that curriculum piece all together. And that's a part of our program that I know that our parents specifically really seek. The other thing that keeps us unique from other programs that run, say, for a summer, is that we send pictures to our parents. So we use an app called Padlet, and we send pictures frequently throughout the days, during the week, that gives us parents an idea of what we're doing so that they can have a conversation when those children go back home at the end of the day. And they can be prompted to talk about what they've learned, where they've explored, who they're engaging with. And then maybe I'll just add a bit more about the mobility piece. I'm thinking about how we choose like where we're going, which in many ways can be organic, but sometimes it's really intentional and planned. And I think you have, I guess we could speak about our roles a bit too, because I'm not with the children in the program on a daily basis, but I know that Star has really intentional decision making around, like, are you going to the split tree today or the frog pond? And there's kind of a scaffolding that happens for children to kind of get to know the arboretum.
Yeah, for sure. So, for example, today some of the children wanted to walk to the fountain. But when you observe the children for the first hour and a half of the morning, you get to understand their body language and their energy levels and how far they might actually be able to do to go. So if we have 4-year-olds and 8-year-olds, those 8-year-olds might not be as tired yet as those 4-year-olds. So today we talked about that as a large group, where some of the children wanted to go off farther to the fountain, but we recognized that many people were feeling tired. So we then negotiated where we were going to go. So we went to the smaller boardwalk where we did our journaling, and then we moved on and we played games, active games, that if the children wanted to participate, they could. If they didn't want to, that was okay too. So it's about a lot of observation of the children and getting to know those children really well so that you can determine what they can do and where they can go. For sure.
I think flexibility is a huge component too that I'd love to just touch on, because for us, as much as we are planning ahead, I think there's a lot of ongoing decision making with being mobile and choosing where you're going, why you're going there. Are you going as a whole group or two small groups? And then what the experience is going to be and how you're going to make meaning of it as well. So I think we're fortunate that Star and I work closely together. We have another educator who works in August who is are also an RECE and is becoming an Ontario certified teacher. And we have a couple of students who work in the program with us as well. And so we either have worked together at the CCLC or have some kind of connection to early learning. So having that shared training and some orientation time together, I think helps with some of that success and the in the moment communication and decision making that happens.
What I'm hearing coming through from your conversations is that connection piece. So whether it's the educators connecting with each other, thinking about how intentionally they are engaging with the children, those connections to the land and those connections to the family, to what the children are doing and to the land and everything, lots of connections, going on there, and that intentionality and those conversations and negotiations that are going on between the children as well, engaging them in that process. So much happening there, and the Arboretum, that just sounds a wonderful place to be able to engage with nature there. So I kind of mentioned earlier that, I have a passion for being in the outdoors. It's where I grew up, in the woods, in the summer holidays. That's where I spent most of my time. And I get a lot of inspiration from that. I can link my interests with working with the children, being outdoors. It's a bit of an ideal world for me personally. But I'm curious, you did mention a little bit some of your inspirations when we were talking just now. But what inspired you to work with school ages in summer camps and to be outdoors in nature with them?
So I grew up in Nova Scotia, where we had a forest in the backyard. So the first 7 years of my life, I spent playing in the forest. And then we moved to Ontario, and that opportunity kind of got taken away. I still had the love of climbing trees and being outside, but it was just a different experience. And then I had my son in 2011, and shortly after having him, I was spent a lot of time. People couldn't believe some of the weather that we'd go for walks in and like be outside. And that started to help me realize that we really, children were missing something. There was something that they were missing. And so when I returned back to work after my mat leave, I started to talk to the director at the time and really was pushing for some kind of outdoor program where we were spending as much time outside as possible. And then when our current director came in, she helped to work with our at the time pedagogical leader to create this program. So that was in 2017. It took 5 years of me dreaming and pushing to have people come on board and a change of directors as well. And so my inspiration just comes every time I see a child try to climb a tree for the first time, or they come in and we've been told that they don't like to be dirty. They don't like to play in the mud. Anytime they get dirty at school, they need to wash their hands. And then their parent picking them up and being like, I have never seen them so dirty. Like, and but they're happy and they're joyful and they're having a great time, yet they're covered in mud. Or a child coming that has a rigid schedule at school, and we're told that they need to see the time, they need to know what time things are going to happen. And we have all the things put in place for that. And they come, and within the first hour of them being in program, it all melts away, and they don't need a schedule. They don't need to see the time. They never ask for the time. So there's just the changes you see in the children when they all of a sudden have this room for autonomy. They get this room for choice and negotiation, and people aren't like forcing a whole bunch of boundaries on them, yet they're giving them more time and space within some firm boundaries, but they get all this choice. And just watching the children thrive in that just continues the inspiration of getting them outside, and especially these older children that maybe haven't had a chance to do or spend this amount of time outside. So every day is a new inspiration to keep going. Right.
Yeah, what you're saying makes me think about kind of the natural like rhythms that we encounter when we're outdoors. I think personally that's been interesting to me, but if I just jump off of what you're saying, like I think we've really tangibly noticed the outdoors as a pedagogical space without needing to be designed or impacted by humans. We've actually removed a lot of the like manufactured materials from the closer playground that we have, which is just a forested space with a fence around it. And when we go to the arboretum, like there's no fences and there's many natural kind of what I would call like natural rhythms to the day that support children. I mean, I guess like well-being, engagement, expression, and sense of belonging in a different way that a classroom, I think it's just different than a classroom. I wouldn't even necessarily say it's better. I think just different, and every human needs something different. So there's a lot of space for that diversity outdoors. So that's a tangent, but I'll bring it back to your question around kind of our inspiration. So for me, I started in my role in 2022, and that our outdoor learning program was up and running already. And so I didn't have any involvement in it starting, and I was quite excited to know that it was happening. I think a lot of my passion in this area comes from my grade 12 outdoor ed experience when I did Headwaters at the time. I grew up in Guelph, and so I had never had an experience where I was engaging in like education outdoors. I did a lot of recreation and camping and Girl Guides, but we had this very community-oriented outdoor experience that was quite transformational. And I felt like I spent the next 10 years trying to find what I experienced in that program. And I did my first degree in psychology. I thought I was going to be like maybe a psychologist or maybe something in another kind of like helping profession or like social services of some kind. And eventually I considered becoming a teacher. And during that process, I worked as an outdoor educator
And I had worked at lots of summer camps too. That was just something I did in my teens. So I knew I loved working with children. And then when I considered going to teachers college, I worked as an outdoor educator, taking school age classrooms to local wild spaces. So just any local park that was close, we did the walk there together. It was a huge like reckoning. I don't know if that's the word reckoning, but like this coming home to like, this was this community outdoor experience that I was yearning for. And we can create it in urban spaces and we can create it with like not as many resources as I thought we needed. And so I kind of tucked that in my back pocket. I became an ECE. I thought I was going to become a public school educator, but I actually did practicum at the CCLC and then fell in love with early learning and stayed in early learning, went on to do pedagogical leadership. So all of this to say that when it came to supporting the outdoor learning program here, it also was very much coming home to the same feeling of like we have a month long together with these children who are 4 to 8. We have spaces that we can visit and revisit, but also so much choice to visit the spaces that are calling to us and tending to the land. We have a garden on part of our site as well. So even if it's not venturing like farther and farther in the Arboretum, there's so much outdoors that I think is part of, even when we stay close and we do things like risky play, or we did a game about boundaries that was really impactful. I think all of that comes to life in a different way outdoors than it does indoors.
That kind of reminds me of, that concept of within the fence and beyond the fence. So those nature-based things that we can do indoors. I love gardening as well. So, tending and growing to vegetables is, something that I really love to do personally and with children as well. And it's quite interesting how our experiences of us growing up lead into our passions that we bring to our work. And often sometimes that path isn't always a straight path. It's a winding path to get there. And Star, you mentioned about, you had that dream and that passion, and it took a little while to get there, but now you have this fantastic outdoor summer program for the children. So thinking about there are, benefits you mentioned before, not just saying indoor or outdoor, traditional or non-traditional, or any better than the others. There's different, benefits to both. So I'm just curious, what would you say the benefits are of you being more mobile in nature? I don't mean nature as in being out in nature, but in the ethos of what you do. What would you say are the benefits of being more mobile?
One of the things that I love the most is we don't, I'm thinking of time. So time is a different construct when you're in an outdoor program that you can move and be in different spaces without being confined by four walls. So for example, today we went to the Arboretum, we went on a shorter walk and we didn't watch the clock. We didn't spend the day watching the clock. There's no clock outside unless we have it on our arm. But if we're engaged with the children, we're not looking at that either. And all of a sudden it was 5 to 12 and we were supposed to be back here for 5 after 12. And so all of a sudden there's this immediate frantic, oh no, it's almost lunchtime. And then we're like, oh, but that's okay. Like lunch will happen when we get there. Where if you're inside and you have a bell that's telling you that it's time for lunch, or you have someone coming and serving you lunch and you have to sit down and be ready for it, you feel more obligated to be there and be ready. And but because we have that flexibility in time and we're not focusing on time so much, we have this beautiful chance to really get engaged, really like observe or be intentional in what we're doing. So it's, I'm not, yeah, I think that's one of the benefits of being mobile is that you're not, it's not stagnant. You don't have four walls that are just like staying still, and but you have all this space around you that you can smell, you can touch, you can feel. There's just like it engages all of our senses being outside and being able to move around. So that's something that's really important and a big benefit.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of like engages the whole person in a different way as well, maybe because
in some ways maybe more reminiscent of, well, I guess that's not necessarily true. I was going to say it's maybe more reminiscent of like life in the sense that we are kind of choosing like an activity, how are we going to get there? Where are we going to go? What do we have to think about before we do that? Rather than exploring an environment. So it's almost like a recreation of like, I mean, it's a lot different than like, say, going to the grocery store, but it's kind of, it has a similar maybe feeling to like going on an adventure and doing something. And then I think it also invites a lot of presence because we are grounded in like with all of our senses and with each other in a different way, I guess. I'm trying to think a bit more about benefits like for that we notice in terms of children. You talked a little bit about like how it might feel different or kind of how children maybe settle into the program differently than they would in a classroom.
So there is like that idea of it's less stimulating. While it's engaging more of the body and more of the senses, the natural environment seems to have less stimulation overall. And we know that if we have less vibrant colors and primary colors, and we have more natural colors and neutral colors, that it helps us to just regulate our bodies and our systems better. So I wonder if that's part of being mobile and being outside, is that we have all of this natural and less stimulating, but the stimulating means not getting that the right thing, but it's just not as overwhelming as being inside for many people, not for everybody, but for many people. And I wonder if that's one of the things that supports such great community and connection that we see when we're in our mobile program.
I'll add maybe one more thing, if that's okay. The other thing I really think about is I think with being mobile in particular, I think a huge advantage is all of the authentic learning and problem solving that comes with moving around. I personally think there's so much learning that happens there. It's when I join on walks, I find just as much value in the walk to where we're going as what's happening when we get there. And so I think that, learning like how to like the process of like moving wherever we're going or how we're going to get there. I remember a couple of summers, I don't think it was last summer, the one before. Remember where there was all the poison ivy and we had to problem solve in real time because there was a massive like overgrowth of poison ivy and we were wanting to walk through. So we worked together with the children and one of the children told us that what he knew about poison ivy. So we ended up walking single file. Nobody touched the poison ivy. And there's just so many of these organic moments that you encounter that as an educator, you couldn't even manufacture some of these things. So I think it's like nature, the environment does so much of the work for you and just sets up wonderful learning opportunities that you can just drop into as an educator and facilitate what you'd like from there.
Wow, some great points that you spoke to there. I have this vision of this journey that you were speaking to, being a great adventure, and then all of that authenticity that you spoke to, things evolving. And it sounds like a lot of leading from the children too, and learning together as our framework speak to that co-learning, problem solving together. So, following on from that a little bit, I'm curious, are there any key considerations or maybe challenges that you face in, and I'm going to say designing, for our listeners, I've got air quotes around designing here, thinking about when you're setting up your mobile outdoor classroom, for want of a better phrase, experience?
I definitely think there are. And I do think it is a design as much as we're not maybe designing the environment. I think there's a lot that goes into designing the experience and selecting materials and setting us up for success. I think one thing that's on my mind right now is the time necessary to prepare. I know it's hard to get paid programming time, but that prep time for something like this, I think is a really big key to success because it not only ensures educators have time to connect and get to know each other, set up some shared expectations, but also time to prepare the learning materials. Yeah, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, so we've been privileged the last few years that we've had a day to connect as a group. of educators. We've got to explore the area together. We looked through the materials together. And then we had a second day to actually sort through the materials, decide what we needed, what things maybe we weren't going to use that we just wanted to keep aside. And then we just had some team building activities that we got to do. And then on top of that, it took 1 other hour that I did outside of time to finish setting things up. So in total to set up, because we've already been running for 7 years, this would be the 8th year with a year off for the pandemic. I already had an idea of what was going to be happening. But those first couple of years, there was a lot of checking in with other programs that have run to find out what they use, what kind of things are important. And as the years have gone, one of the things I would really recommend is learning or researching risky play, because every day you see just about every category of risky play when you're in a mobile outdoor environment. So that's, yeah, so time with a team to connect and then learning from other programs has really been helpful in getting prepared.
Mm-hmm. I think also visiting the space, sorry, this just came to mind, but I think visiting anyone new who's working in the program, going to the spaces, getting familiar with where you might be going, if you have the chance, get to know some of the plants that live there, some of the animals you might encounter, how are the spaces used, that kind of preparation will help you as an educator to kind of know where you might want to like scaffold some ideas with the children.
Yeah, definitely that setting up for success. It kind of reminds me of a phrase, and I need to get this the right way around. So failing to plan is planning to fail. So that pre-work that happens. And yeah, tapping into those around you, that experience, that knowledge that's out there. And I guess our documents speak to that co-learning with, you know, our colleagues in our community and so on. So following on from your considerations, are there any particular tips or strategies that you could share with our listeners when they're thinking about sourcing, storing, transporting materials to your outdoor space?
The first thing I would say is get a really good wagon. Don't like that. It's probably our most expensive piece of equipment is the wagon that we got. We have one that's lasted since 2017. It is one of those big, heavy metal wagons. But because we chose to spend a large portion of our budget on the wagon, it has lasted, but it's the thing that's really important to me is it gives me that security when we're out in the arboretum away from site. Maybe we've walked for half an hour, that if somebody gets hurt, I have a wagon that I can actually put a person in. Many of these wagons that we buy that are not quite as sturdy, and they're not supposed to have people in them. And I think sometimes we forget that. And it's a smoother ride. So if you're thinking, if you've injured yourself, what would you actually want to be in? And how are you going to be comfortable pulling that person? So that's like my biggest thing is get a good wagon. Mm-hmm. It might sound a little silly, but it's definitely one of the best resources that we have, or pieces of equipment that we have invested in. I mean, there's many other things, but is there something that's coming right to the top of your mind, Kim?
I guess, well, so this isn't necessarily like a tip or strategy, but what you were saying, Star, made me think back to the preparation. Really being thoughtful in terms of, I think when you want to do big adventures and kind of exploring and excursions, you really also have to be thinking some of the risky play work that we've done also does risk assessment stuff. So just being aware of what could happen right now and being really clear as the educator team, how do we make decisions if something were to happen? Even if it's as simple as like, we get a thunderstorm, what is our plan for that? And what are our policies in place that we fall back to in those moments? So I think clarity on those things, like you said, the help with not having too much confusion or panic when things do go wrong, because every so often they do. But
I'm not wrong, just not as planned.
Not as planned. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think of someone getting hurt, but also not as planned. Yeah. And the other thing though is sometimes things happen I was just thinking we had one child who did break their arm, but we were not actually off site at all. They had just tripped over a log here. And so I think, like, I guess I'm just thinking, like, keeping things, I don't know, kind of sometimes it seems like if you're doing something mobile or more adventure based, that more can go wrong. And I don't think we've actually found that, but we do have to think about it, I guess, is just my point, and have plans in mind. However, we have some other materials that are really helpful for us and just ways of thinking that I think are supportive and help our success. We have found that an outdoor tent can be really helpful. We've been fortunate as a center to have a couple that we purchased during the pandemic, but I also personally had a winter camping tent that I've set up a couple times, and that provides some shade, but it also provides some protection for the materials that we have because we have things like books and art materials, and we still have learning materials you may find indoors. And we have big waterproof tubs that we put them in. And so we bring them out to our on-site space. And then we may bring some with us on our excursion. Things like tarps, I mean, everyone can run their program differently, but we choose to have hammocks, and we have a slack line and a couple of things like that that provide just a variety of experiences outdoors.
It might be interesting to note our home base is split into two sections. And so one section has no manufactured equipment, and the other section has all the manufactured equipment. So any hammocks or the hammock chairs, the books, all that stuff stays in one area. The mud kitchen, it's all in one area. And then the other area is free of that. So it's all about what the children can use with their imagination. And then when we go to the arboretum, it's whatever we take with us that we think we might need for that day. But yeah.
Yeah, I just thought of another thing too. I think being really explicit with families about what your program entails is really helpful, so they know they can make the conscious choice, is this program for me and my child? And then also sharing lots of as many details as you can, kind of giving some examples. We have lots of prep documents that we kind of send to families to help clarify what to expect, what to bring, what not to bring. I think those things are really important. Lots of preemptive conversations with children. I think you do a lot, Star, in terms of like setting children up for an experience. So we don't just jump into something. We are really intentional.
For example, today we were on our walk, one of the children decided to go look at something that was in the forest, and one of the children said, "Stop, there could be poison ivy." And one of the TAs that is with us, her brother's in the army, and she's like, "Actually, here, I can show you a picture of what it looks like when somebody gets poison ivy." So she showed them, she asked first, and I'm like, "Yeah, I think it's a great learning experience for them." And so she showed them a picture of him with the poison ivy rash up his leg, and it does not look very nice. And so then we talked about the different sayings that we experienced. So leaves of three, leave them be. Why poison ivy is so dangerous for us, and that is not actually the plant, it's the oil that the plant produces that makes us itchy. So just, and then that, I didn't have to talk to them. We're not in the area that had poison ivy, but we will visit that area at some point, and we know where that is. So having already had that conversation, just very authentically, it just came up, was a great opportunity. So just also that goes along with being aware of the environment that you're going into and what you might encounter. Yeah.
And I think back to learning from others, like when you're talking about poison ivy, I remember the time we went through, we knew that poison ivy is the rash comes from the oil. So we actually just had children wash their legs when we came back with a face cloth and some soap and water. And so knowing little things like that and tapping into like who around you might be able to help you learn more. We have an arboretum center, but I learned that from a family friend, I think. And there's many things we've learned from the Guelph Outdoor School and our Forest and Nature School practitioner training and other educators we work with. I've had educators teach me things about birds that I didn't know before, and habitats. So I do think like kind of stretching out your tendrils to learn from other people is helpful. There was one other thing I was going to mention. Go
It's
ahead.
really important also to have access to a washroom.
Oh, yeah.
So wherever you are, knowing where your washrooms are, that's something that's really important. One, you need to be able to wash hands, but also people just need to look after their bodies. So that's something that's important to think of.
And maybe if I can add a couple of dispositions that I notice in educators that help the program feel successful. I guess I'm thinking more strategies. I think I mentioned flexibility, but I think like patience and problem solving, like there's a lot that is less known or controllable when you're in a mobile program. And so I think having that willingness to kind of embrace what might happen and communicate about how you want to kind of navigate it, even though that's different than materials, it's just making me think a little bit about that as a strategy overall, I guess.
And a strategy along with that is knowing the boundaries, but your own boundaries. So how far are you comfortable with children wandering away from you? Are you comfortable with them leading or not leading? Yeah, so it's about your own comfort level too, and knowing how and when to set those boundaries. So you set those boundaries before you start exploring in a space so that the children are aware, and then that way you can follow through on the boundary.
Wow. So many great tips, strategies, information that you shared there. What was coming to me was, again, that setting up for success. So, you know, do the educators have the dispositions for the work, the type of learning that you're engaging in those conversations around the family, with the families around exactly what the program entails, the documentation, you know, doing the risk assessments, you know, what policies do we have in place? Again, all of those things that set the program up for success. And I would never have thought about a wagon that was strong enough to put somebody in if they had an accident. So yeah, that's a little bit of a light bulb moment for me, and maybe for our listeners as well. So you did touch on this a little bit earlier about forest schools and their philosophies and approaches. Are there any other philosophies that you feel that are well suited when we're thinking about being in mobile outdoor environments?
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the Indigenous perspective, because the way that we interact with the land is so important. And we know that they are caretakers, but it's also our job to be a caretaker of the land. And one of the things, I believe it's called the Honorable Harvest, is something that while we might not name it all the time, it's something that we truly believe in within our program. So we'll come across a field of flowers and the children are going to want to pick them. But instead of allowing them to just pick away, we'll pause and we'll wonder why we should pick them, who else might need those flowers, and how many we should pick if we are going to pick them. So it's about those pausing and having those intentional thoughts about what you're doing with the land. The other day, it was a really neat experience. Some of the children were making a habitat for some ants, and they were peeling the leaves off the trees. And so I said, well, I bet the ants are very happy with what you're doing, but how does the tree feel? What do you think is going on for that tree? And then one of the boys immediately, he didn't even pause to think. He's like, oh, okay. And then he went over and told all his peers that we need to stop picking the leaves. The tree needs those leaves. So it wasn't about me telling them to stop picking the leaves, but it was about thinking about what we were doing to the environment, what we were doing to that tree by picking all the leaves. And while we were trying to help the ant, who were we harming as well? So yeah, the Indigenous perspective, we see it a lot. We can identify a lot with it within the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think I feel similarly. Like, I would probably want to say, like, for me at least, I've been really inspired by Braiding Sweetgrass and a lot of Robin Wall Kimmerer's work. So I think that's kind of a touchstone that I come back to now that I work at the CCLC and we have so many ongoing explorations around our relationship with land and animals and plants. And I think I've been encouraged to kind of think about Indigenous perspectives in a theoretical way and what that means for our practical reality. So like Star was saying, how do we decide how many flowers to pick or whether we pick them or how we give back to the land and things like that.
Another thing that we've been working on is our language. So instead of calling the beings that are out there it, we refer to who. So who's making that noise? Or who did that feather belong to? Who did that leaf come from? So talking in, as a who instead of an it creates relationship. And when we, my daughter, she was only three, she's walking down the sidewalk and she was stopping to look at something and explore it. And I'm like, come on, we got to get going. We're going to miss the bus for your brother. And she said, but mommy, if I don't get to know it, how am I going to love it? So that's where we come from. If we don't know who we're around and we don't have a relationship, then we're not going to learn to love it and care for. I just said it. So them. And it's really important how we talk about the other beings that are around us.
Yeah, language is so important. And when we're thinking about intentionally using language as well, those the impact of our language, our actions, those connections kind of shifts our way of thinking and being. I love the piece when you spoke to, we often talk about children, learning empathy, but we think of that as in a human empathy, whereas thinking about that as empathy from the non-human perspective as well. Lovely, thank you. So you did speak to some of the resources, quite a lot of resources earlier. So I'm curious, are there any other materials that you use, or any particular go-to resources that you like to incorporate into your work?
I think there's a few. One thing I can think of is the, I forget what they're called from the Arboretum, the Arboretum identification cards.
Yes.
So we just so happen to work at the University of Guelph, and our Arboretum produces these incredible identification cards on all types of species. And I think those are, at least for me, they're really helpful because we encounter all kinds of unknown beings. And so being able to name and identify who we're meeting is really helpful.
And those are available online to anyone. So anyone can buy those. They're
Yeah.
not, you don't have to be in the Arboretum to get them.
We've seen them be used. We've done some work also with the Council of Outdoor Educators of Ontario. And it's funny when other people will show us those resources just because I feel like we know them so intimately. So they're widely used across Ontario, I understand, I think. So that's one thing. And then I have some apps that I have on my phone that I use. So the iNatural app, the Seek app, the Sibley Bird app. Those are all apps that I use. We don't use them all the time, but if we're trying to figure out who is making a noise or has left dropping, that's one of the other resources we use. And then we also use a lot of the guides that are local to our space. So the Ontario guide. There's a whole series of them. They have plants, they have animals, and then storybooks. There's lots of storybooks that can support the learning and exploration. One of my favorite go-tos is the Anywhere Artist. It helps in a moment when you have children who want to be really active, but then you have some that who are quieter and they just want to sit back or they're feeling tired. And you can bring out that book and encourage them to use whatever's around you to make art. And it's nice when you walk past and you see somebody else's art just sitting there, the transient art. So it's there and then it's gone, which is beautiful. We have educator books that we use. I don't have all the names, but one of the ones we use is a coyote guide. It has a whole, it's a mentorship type book and it has games in it and it helps you to identify what skills it is that you're trying to focus on within a game. So it, right now is an observation week. This is week one and I'm spending a lot of time observing the children and their play to find out what games they want to, what games will best work for them. So they wanted to make bow and arrows and we talked about what a bow and arrow is for, why we might use it, and then off they went and played. And then I was watching how they were doing it. So then I'm formulating the idea that they want to do predator and prey games. So what I'm going to do is go back to the coyote guide, learn some of these games again that I can bring forth to children so that I'm providing them with games that they want to do. I'm not just saying, okay, we're going to play this game because I think we should play it, but we're going to play these games because I've seen these behaviors, which we were talking about being emergent. So just finding those little like special resources that you connect to, because not everyone's going to connect to the same resources. And I think that's something that's really important.
Yeah, there's a couple other good like adult resource books. I think Vitamin N also has a lot of activities. Not that you necessarily need to go and look for an activity, but sometimes I like that you can bring them with you. And if you're in the middle of the forest and you're kind of like, okay, I have this type of energy and this type of energy, how can I support our explorations? They're really helpful. They're designed for to be done outdoors, so that is useful sometimes. And there's a couple books by David, not David, his name's Jacob, and I can't remember his last name.
I'm picturing it, but I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, if I remember him, I can let you know.
Does it start with an R?
It does, yeah.
I
I
want
think
to
it's.
say Rosenberg, but I'm not sure if that's the same.
Yes, I think we're thinking of the same person. Yes.
And then I'm just thinking maybe even more than resources, just quickly back to materials. One of the things that we do is we do journaling. So we journal every day, or I should say most days. And those are just small journal books that we take with us. We have a basket that has journals and pencils and pencil crayons, and we go. And then wherever we are, usually when we arrive at a destination is when we'll first journal before people wander off. Because once we start to wander, we kind of lose track of time. So, but that is one of the materials that we do. So if you don't know about nature journaling, maybe a resource that would support that could be beneficial.
I'm also thinking Stardust sit spots and uses acrylic markers really well. So we have wooden name tags for children, and the acrylic markers work well on the wood. So that's something that we found beneficial.
Great. So lots of resources, strategies. So for our listeners, if you are based in Niagara, we do have Coyote's Guide in our library. So check it out. I'm particularly drawn to that one as well. And you also spoke to the Anywhere artist. I'm gonna look that one up. I'm not familiar with that, but I am familiar with transient art and Andy Goldsworthy. There's a lot of transient art, so I do get inspiration from there too. And you're gonna show me a book.
We just discovered, well, not we, but a PhD student and the philosophy department suggested this book called Hey Little Ant. It has been quite helpful in conversations at the CCLC, and then now we're taking it to OLP as well. So there's the Anywhere artist.
Wonderful. And what we'll do for our listeners is we'll pop those in the notes at the end so people can find all these resources, and we'll get the authors and everything, and we'll share those. Thank you. Wonderful, lovely. So we are coming towards the end of our time together. Just a one more question. So when we're thinking about outdoor mobile classrooms, and you didn't touch on flexibility a little bit earlier. So when we're thinking about flexibility and adaptability to meeting the diverse needs of all of our children, could you maybe share some ways that being outdoors enables you to do that?
I mean, one thing that comes to mind is that I think when you're outdoors, because children can kind of self-select how they want to engage, there's less kind of predetermined skills that they might need to play. I'm just thinking of like a log could be something that you sit on or crawl on or climb on or jump off of. Same with how like sticks are used. And so I think just being open to the children's ways of engaging with nature allows us to promote like diverse play and exploration in ways that meet their needs, but also that are just more inclusive. So when I think of a classroom or even like a playground structure, there's different kind of initial skills children may kind of need in order to access something, whereas I don't find that outdoors it has that. So I think a mental kind of mindset around that open-mindedness to how children may be drawn to engaging in nature is just one thing that I can think of.
Yeah, and most spaces provide different areas for different moments. So maybe you have high energy or you don't, and you just want to sit and relax or sit back and watch other people. We have a group that would rather just sit back and watch some of the other children. So they're experiencing risky play vicariously. So they're sitting back and they're watching instead of actually engaging. And we're learning that that actually creates the same kind of response within our body system as being involved in the actual risky play. So that is a great opportunity for them to experience those kind of same problem solvings and wonderings that they would experience if they were doing the risky play themselves, but yet are not comfortable maybe actively participating. So the ability to have a space that supports each person in that moment, whatever it might be, is something that's
That made me think too of like embracing different relational dynamics. So naturally, children may take on different roles within a community. So somebody may be more interested in like kind of leading or decision making or helping. Somebody else may be more interested in like another type of role. So I think that's just something on my mind in terms of different maybe social or emotional interests. And so those relationships can look really unique because there's not necessarily like, I'm just comparing it to indoors again. There's not necessarily like activities or tables or spaces, but the environment has created different opportunities. And then there's kind of a more cozy space to natural. I don't know. It depends on the outdoor space. We find that there's natural kind of cozy spots in nature that invite you to kind of like crawl underneath or like sit and like study or listen. And then there's spaces that are open that it just invite you to like run and move or explore in a different way. And then trees that just invite you to climb, ponds that invite you to dip your toes in. So I think like children kind of show you more about who they are through some of those invitations, how they respond.
Kind of makes me think of, often when we think about invitations, we think about those invitations that we set up as educators, but when we're out in nature and we're moving around and we're mobile, that there are those natural invitations that nature affords us and offers us. That piece that you spoke to around what I was hearing was around, knowing children, their temperaments, their personalities, and through those relationships, and definitely that open, being open-minded.
Yeah, I'd just like to quickly add with those natural invitations, it's important as us who are guiding the experience to provide the time for the children to actually see those invitations and to feel welcomed into them. Because sometimes you just your pace can be so fast that there isn't time to actually observe that invitation that is right there waiting for you, and you just walk right past it. So that's something that I've noticed is just slowing the pace down.
And children may need like different amounts of time to adjust to new experiences. So some children, like, the first time they see a pond, they, are wanting to poke all the sticks in, and other children need to visit the pond like 5 times before they're ready to get too close. So I think that mental flexibility and awareness of just that we are, a whole learning community, and there's all kinds of unique beings within the community and within the broader nature community as well.
Yeah, that slowing down certainly resonates a lot with me. We live in such a hectic, fast-paced life. When we are outdoors and when we are mobile in nature, we do have that more of that time. It encourages us more to slow down. I know there's lots of conversation around slow pedagogy at the moment as well. So we are at the end of our time together and our conversation. But before we sign off, before we finish, I'm just wondering if there's anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners around summer mobile outdoor programming at all.
One thing that really happens supports specifically in the summer is water. So if you have access to water, we are fortunate that we have a building close enough that we can tap into a water source that we fill a rain barrel. But that allows those really hot days that we have when it's 31 and feels like 38 or 40, that being in the shade and having that access to water play is something that really supports the children and being able to manage their bodies, but also just being able to be outside during that time. That's something that I've found has been so important in all 8 years of running OLP, is that access to some form of water to be outside during those times.
Yeah, water being so important for every aspect. Wonderful. Okay, so thank you both, Star and Kim, for spending the last hour with me in conversation about your amazing summer outdoor nature learning program. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank
Thank
you.
you for having us. It was so great to talk about something that we're so passionate about.
Yeah, and that passion definitely has come through this afternoon. Wonderful. So that wraps up our conversation on mobile outdoor classrooms. A big thank you to you for listening to this episode of the ECCDC podcast, and to Kim and Star for sharing their time with us and offering us some insight into the Childcare and Learning Centre's Exploring Nature Outdoor Learning Summer Programme. Absolute pleasure to hear Kim and Star share their passion for connecting children to nature and being outdoors, and the great resources that they shared, which you can find in the show notes below. A key takeaway for me was that if you have a passion and a vision for something, to keep advocating for it. It might take a while, but you can get there in the end. If you liked this episode, please share your thoughts in the comments below, and if you haven't already done so, please subscribe. Join us next time. We will be discussing risk and challenge in children's play with the ECCDC's long-standing friend and supporter, Rusty Keeler.